Mr. Blackhall, Reel 6. You were telling me where you and your mates slept, rather than under the tank. Where did you sleep?
Well, you found your own sleeping position. Some of the boys slept in the tanks themselves, in the driving seat or in the turret. That was, again, dangerous because a creeping patrol of Germans could drop a grenade in or something like that, and you've had it. But there you are.
Where did you sleep?
I slept in the hull of the recovery tank, which had no turret, so I was in the open. You was much safer, I thought, and I was proved right, I suppose, because I'm still here now. But you was much better sleeping under a tree or in a hedge or in the open, somewhere where you could get up quick and run.
But you didn't dig a slit trench when you stopped. You didn't use slit trenches.
I didn't. No, we didn't.
So what would you do when you got up then?
Well, obviously, when you awoke in the morning, you had a look round you, and you had sentries posted during the evening looking after you. The first thing was a brew up.
Now, how would you brew up?
We either made a little fire if we could find enough wood, or we had little. Every tank had a little brew. What do they call them? Paraffin burners, a small burner. So you brewed a drop of you had an empty petrol can or an empty tin, an empty what can I call it?
A tin.
A fruit tin, yeah. Just an ordinary tin, any tin you could find to brew your water. And of course you had your tea, sugar and milk, and you had it already all mixed together. The milk was not cow's milk, it was condensed milk, not condensed milk, it was a mixture of sugar and milk together. I suppose they used to, when we was kids, we used to have it in a tin. But no. Anyway, that was it. We had a brew up, and perhaps one of the officers would come along and have a look at you and see if everybody was all right, and all he was after was a cup of tea because he had to go back to the headquarters on to get his cup. But they used to come along and have a brew with you, have a cup of tea. But then you just started doing.
Now what about breakfast?
Your orders.
Hang on, what about breakfast? Food.
Well, breakfast you had your own. You had your own. Lump of cheese and a bit of bread.
So where'd that come from?
Well, that you already had that on your tank. Was you was given rations in the morning for the day, and that had to last.
Now, what were they? Were they compo rations?
It was hardtack biscuits. Hardtack. We didn't live as good as the Americans did, but we had enough. We had hardtack. We had tins of bully beef. We had we didn't have any bread, but we had the biscuits there.
Would you cook your own food, or would the cooks do it for you?
No, we didn't have any cooked food. We wasn't that not in action. You didn't, but away along the line later on, we used to find eggs. We used to find a chicken. Sometimes one of the boys used to dig out a rabbit out of the field, a hole in the ground, and he used to just gut it. These Scotchmen, you know, they're used to living wild. They come from the wilds of Scotland, and that's it. But there you are. It was a revelation to me and some of the others. But they used to gut a rabbit and just throw it on the coals of a fire, and it cooked in its own juices, in its own skin. But we got by. We didn't go
so
hungry.
So after breakfast, what would happen after breakfast?
Well, after breakfast, we would do what we were supposed to do.
Now, what was
just
that?
Look around at the vehicles and do any little job that wanted doing. The tank crews themselves had to look after their own tanks, and they called upon us from the recovery tank if they had any job that was above their abilities.
Now, what sort of
and
job?
And we just hung around We just hung around where we were and waited for orders.
Now, what sort of things might they call you in to help with?
Well, if the tank wasn't starting up properly, as it should do, they may have had a slight petrol choke, or the dust and grit may have got into the air conditioner. And these sort of things had to be taken out and cleaned and put back, or the plugs taken out and cleaned and put back. Just little things. But most of the tank crews got to the point where they looked after their own tank, because they was associated with these things every day, every morning, and it was their life that they was looking after as well as we were. So most of them learnt how to clean their own air filters and their own fuel pipes, because it to their own benefit. So actually, we had a cushy time. We had a cushy time although we made ourselves busy going looking for little jobs. But there you are. Everybody had to look after one another. You had to look after. And after an action, when you lagered up in the evening, you had the petrol lorries come along and they needed to be unloaded. And every tank had to be topped up and ready for action at all times. So you was kept busy.
So what would you do in the evening lager? You know, what was your role?
Just found somewhere to eat and sleep, that's all.
So you wouldn't help with the re-ammunition, refuelling?
We unloaded the lorries that came up with the petrol and water and food and everything. And then the various tank crews came to the area and picked up their ration of fuel and eats and water and took it to their various tanks. But this was up, you know, in the evening after everything was settled down.
So all you do in a day, basically, is help the tank mechanics where necessary, and then in the evening get the evening lager ready for the tank crew.
Exactly,
that was your duty. Any other duties?
Well, there's always things to do, yeah, especially when you're in action, because there are sentry duties. You have to take your turn on sentry duties.
What was it like on sentry duty?
Well, it wasn't very nice, because you never knew that thing moving down the in front of you was a cow, a bull, or a sheep, or a bloody man with a rifle. But it was a bit scary. Because you see, you was in a country unfamiliar to yourself, and the surroundings were unfamiliar, and you was in a strange country, but there were strange people knocking around every corner. You see, the Bocage country, as I said before, was little apple orchards, and everywhere you looked, there was a hedgerow, and sometimes you found that Germans had used the roots of the hedgerow as a ceiling, and buried under the hedgerow, and you can come across half a company of bloody men living underground, they hated the terrain the same as we did, because you had no open country and not a lot of open country to move, especially with tanks. But so all of a sudden you'd have a half a company of men pop up from under the ground, and we found out by driving the wheel of the track of a tank along one hedgerow that there was living accommodation built underneath there. So we had to be very, very careful.
Now, what's the next thing you remember then?
Well, it goes blank now, because after the excitement of the chase up the hill and getting knocked out, we laid back and we was reorganising. The men that got killed and got wounded was taken back, and replacements came up to man nose tanks up again. And then it was days afterwards, we loaded the tanks and all the equipment on the tank transporters, and we went as near we could to Sell. Sell was up Calne, where the Yanks were preparing to go, so they was held up there. Because when the Yanks went through, they left us standing. When the big blow happened, we used our tanks a few times to pick off various gun emplacements and machine gun emplacements and that, where it was holding infantry up. But once the Yanks went through Calne, they opened out and they went like a fly out of a boot, fly out of a bottle. But they never stopped, and they went through and they swept everything aside in front. That's where the Falaise Gap, if you remember, there was a mention of it, the Falaise Gap came into being. What it was men, machines, bodies, cattle, everything was just bulldozed to one side. When we went through, it was just bulldozed to one side, and they was on their way to Belgium. And I don't think, except for a few occasions, they came up against opposition, but they swept that aside. I think it was Patton, wasn't it? General Patton.
Don't worry about the Americans. No. Stick to what happened to you.
Well, we were left stranded because the war left us. It went. And at that time, I've got to tell you this, I was ill.
In what way?
I was ill. Well, I don't know. I can't explain it, but I was bonbons. I went. In the First World War they called it shell shock, but in our war they called it battle fatigue. So apparently they told me afterwards I was walking around like a zombie. I couldn't be spoken to. I couldn't be. Something had got me. You know.
Now, you hadn't been under much fire though, or any fire. How had this happened?
This was the experience of what I see in those tanks.
It was what you'd seen, not what had happened. So that had actually had a real impact on you.
And of course, your mind is active all the time, isn't it? I mean, every minute of the night, you're trying to sleep, but you can't sleep because you're worrying about what's outside. I was over the hill. I was gone. And I ended up in the 88 Military General Hospital. They flew me back in Brussels. Now, from then on, I was treated well, brought back. I don't know how long I stayed in the hospital. I was there for perhaps 3 weeks to a month.
And whereabouts was this? Whereabouts? September
to... in Brussels. Oh, that was, it's got to be September, October. It's got to be into October, hasn't it? Because we was 30th of September, we was at the hill at Comont. It's got to be
30th of July. 30th of July you were at Comont.
That's right. July. Oh, it's got to be August then, isn't it?
I think they reached Brussels in September.
Yeah, it's August, about September, yeah. Yeah, it's got to be September.
And how long were you in hospital
because
for?
You see, time... You don't know. You can't take time. And the state I was in, I didn't know whether I was coming or going. Honest, I can't remember.
Do you remember how you felt then?
I was terrible. I was terrible. I think I was walking around in circles at one time. Mind you, I wasn't on my own. There was two Irish guardsmen went back to the hospital with me, and we were treated the same, but.
And what treatment did you get?
Well, just back to just normal treatment. You were looked after, you were well fed, And I think that's half of the time some people put it on. Like shell shock in the First World War was executed. They shot people in the First World War because they classified them as making out. But in this war, they took the sensible view and called it.
So how long were you in hospital for? 2 or 3 months?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Right. Yeah, 3 weeks to a month. And then we was returned to the unit. And by this time, the unit had gone, and the tank, Six Guys Tank Brigade had taken Brussels. So we were the other side of Brussels, entering into Holland. And I can remember rejoining the battalion at a place called Helmond. Helmond in Holland, that was just south of Eindhoven. And the battalion was resting. They were preparing to cross the Rhine, going through the Reichswald Forest. I met up with my tank crew, which was my recovery crew, at a place called, let me remember now, it was, I can't think of it offhand. The address. It was a civilian house they were in, because we sort of parked the tanks along the road and took over whichever accommodation we was outside of.
What was the billet like?
It was a house. It was a proper house, and there was a young girl still living there, looking after her father's property, Johanna. Actually, she became my girlfriend, because after the war, she came back to England to get married to her soldier boyfriend, and I was already courting. But there you are, that's another story. But, I rejoined the crew there, and I'd done my duty, or guard duties and all that. And
how did you feel by that time? Had you settled down again by then?
I was settled back, into my own self, disgusted with myself, because I'd missed... the battalion that they're enjoying the fame these days, because they took Brussels, the tank battalion, the Guards Tank Battalion, Six Guards Armoured Brigade, they called it. It wasn't a battalion, it was a brigade, because it was made up of Scots, Welsh, Irish, and Grenadiers.
So what did you fit? You fitted back into the recovery team then?
Yeah. We was in, four of us in the Great Recovery. We was in this house being looked after. There was a local factory down the road where we went for our meals, and we was getting cooked meals in them days, because we went down there, and young Johanna, the 16 or 17-year-old girl, we put a berry on her head and dressed her in a tank suit, give her a billy can, and she joined us in the queue and got the same rations as we got. I think the chaps in the crew recognised her, but took no notice. So she was, because she'd been living on bottles of boiled eggs that she had down the cellar, because there was no shops and no groceries or nothing for the civilians in them days. So we looked after her, and she looked after us. But... We just stayed there for a while, for a few weeks, I think. A few weeks, because they was preparing the push from there we went to the bridge too far, which was a right cock-up.
Well, tell me about
Market
that,
Garden. The Air Force had dropped... dropped our parachutists, a big force of parachutists, into the arms of the Germans, who were sitting in the ground waiting for them. At the bridge at Arnhem, they were supposed to take it over, and we were supposed to travel up there to give them armoured resistance, but we never got there. They were all taken prisoner, and the battle was over before we ever got near the place. It was a right disaster. There's a book about it in the on the rounds now, A Bridge Too Far. Market Garden, it was called. So there you are, we were stranded again. But in this instance, we didn't come up, well, we came up with very little resistance. I think it was the beginning of the end of the war, because it was the end of 1944 coming into 1945, wasn't it? And there again, we lagered up and just sat back and waited for things to happen. And it did happen. We went across the Rhine.
What do you remember of that? Well, that's quite a bit away. That's March, I think. That's in March.
That was in March, was it?
Yeah. Well, that's the next thing you remember, is it?
Well, it was funny because once we entered Germany, we crossed the Rhine and entered Germany. I remember the weather was snow. It was ice, because we did then dig slip trenches and we got white smocks issued to cover us up, camouflage us with white smocks. I remember that. And
did you paint the tanks white as well?
No,
so you didn't.
The tanks weren't used. They was lagered up in the woods and kept out of sight. We only used the tanks if they came up to very heavy opposition. But we met very little opposition until we crossed the Rhine. We went through the Eisfeld Forest, and the civilians there wouldn't give us water or anything.
How did you get on with the German civilians? Generally, it sounds like you didn't get on with them well.
No, they were hostile, and not only that, there was a non-fraternising ban. But
how were they hostile?
Well, they wouldn't speak to you, and they was very gruff. And they wouldn't let you use the water taps to get your water for your billy can. You had to find a stream or something like that to find your water. But they were very at that time, because later on in the war they became more friendly. I can tell you that later. That was after, when the war finished.
Now, so what happened next? And you're advancing into Germany. Any incidents you remember from that time?
But I don't remember much more, because I was still a bit bonbons with me doings. My mind had gone. But I can remember doing a few jobs on the tanks. The tanks went moving along, and we didn't see much action after that. We didn't see much action. The Yanks were away. They were away like racehorses. We couldn't keep up with them. We were only called on when there was a rough spot. But the only thing I can remember now, looking back, is we went to a place called Celle, Celle, and the war was on its finish, and we was ordered up onto Lunenburg Heath with our tanks. And Montgomery was there, Willie Whitelaw was there, everybody was there, and thanking us and everything for that. But the reason we was there was we was handing our tanks back. We had ceased to become the 3rd Tank Battalion.
But that's after the end of the war.
That was at the end of the war. Well, the war was more or less finished then, as far as I can remember.
Was that before or after VE Day?
Oh, that was before VE Day, well before it.
So you handed over the tanks?
We handed back the tanks, because then we became 2nd Battalion Scots Guards. We reverted back to infantry.
And which battalion? You were the 2nd Battalion?
We reverted back. We came... See, when we paraded on Lunenburg Heath with our tanks and our armour, we handed it all over to the Engineers Battalion, right? Now, we lost Major, by that time he was a Major, Major Whitelaw, he left us. The officers stayed with us, Officer Mann and a couple of others, because they'd become full lieutenants by now. Willie Whitelaw left us, the tanks left us, and we became, we had a new, I forget his name now, we had a new colonel. He was on that, my release papers.